A Podcast One production.
I'm Sammy Lucas, and I'm romantically challenged. Okay, let's talk about sex. If you're using Viagra, should you warn your partner? Is it rude to ask a woman to get a Brazilian? And how do you get your sex drive back if it seems to have gone MIA? These are just some of the issues I discuss with friends on the dating scene. Now, I ain't no sex expert, but I do know someone who is. Dr. Nikki Goldstein is a sexologist, so she studies sexual relationships for a living, and she's agreed to join me for a pretty intimate chat. I intended for this to be one episode, but there was so much to talk about with Dr. Nikki that we have turned it into two episodes. Part one is more of a chat about the issues specific to sex and dating when you're 40 plus. And in part two, Dr. Nikki answers some of the questions you've sent me via social media. So, part one is Dr. Nikki.
My name is Dr. Nikki Goldstein, and I'm a female in my early 30s. I enjoy drinking a good glass of wine, traveling, and Pilates. I work in the media as a sexologist, and I have never been married. My ideal partner would be kind but stern, independent, and someone I can respect and look up to. Dating in my 30s for me is complex because everyone either comes with baggage, emotional or more, and it feels as though there is this pressure to just hurry up and pick someone. I believe a good connection is hard to find, but I'm open to finding that connection with someone who might not tick off things on a physical list, but make me feel a certain way.
Nikki, I saw this meme on Instagram recently that said, I don't know what kind of sex you have that makes you want to tattoo that person's name on your body, but I ain't had it yet. And I thought, oh my God, I ain't had that kind of sex yet. I have never had the kind of sex that makes me want to engrave somebody's name into my flesh. Am I doing it wrong, or is the best yet to come?
Well, I kind of want to ask you the question of what is that sex that you're describing? Like, you're saying that you've never had that yet, but
I've never wanted to tattoo someone's name on my body.
I've never wanted to get a tattoo, so there's the problem in itself. But I think what this signifies is that we have these unrealistic expectations, and we all look at everyone else thinking, well, they must be having really good sex. So I wonder if she has multiple orgasms, or wonder if her partner satisfies her. Yet for so many of us, we're having those same concerns, those same insecurities. So maybe what this all comes down to is our expectations, or what I like to call sexpectations, and really trying to zone in on what is good sex rather than continually having some goal that just feels like it's further and further and further away.
So I guess a lot of it is to do with chemistry. What makes for really amazing sexual chemistry, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's one of those things that you either have that or not. And this is when it comes to looking for a partner. It's like, what do we look for most? Do we look for that chemistry, or do we look for specific things on a list? Do they have the right job? Do they look a certain way? You've got to find the balance between both. But that chemistry is something when you look at that person that you're attracted to them on a deeper level. Now, that doesn't always guarantee great sex. That's just attraction. And that attraction might even fade. You know, it could be very surface level. It could be something that's new and fresh and exciting. But when you have that chemistry, at least it's the grounds to get something back. A lot of people say to me, how do I spice things up when I never had it in the first place? Things do dwindle, but it's good to have the basis of that chemistry to remind each other of how it can be.
Right. I've got a lot of questions from our listeners, which I'm going to get to. But before we get to those, I want to ask you a few other more general questions about sex, and particularly, you know, for my age group and people over the age of 40, because, you know, there's more singles over the age of 40 than ever before, re-entering the dating scene, you know, having sex for a lot of us with someone new for the first time in 10, 15, 20 years. And there's certain issues that I know in my friendship circle of single friends that are common themes. So let's get down to it. The first issue for me, it excites a lot of people, but it scares the pants off me, is Viagra. Now, I have never been with a guy yet that, as far as I know, has used Viagra, but I've heard some horror stories. Like, you know, it can give a guy a hard-on for hours and hours. I couldn't think of anything more horrific. I want to get back to watching Mindhunter. Thanks very much. I've got episodes to get through. So what do we need to know? What are the basics of Viagra?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Viagra is it can actually feel nearly violating when somebody takes it and hasn't told you because it is a longer lasting effect. And there's also this assumption. So if you've been out on a date and you're thinking that things are going back to someone's home and it might be somewhat sexual, but it's not like you've had sex before or this is a guarantee, someone takes a Viagra, it can feel very violating of, hang on a second, is this something you've just assumed that's happened? Also, too, if you are going to be having sex and you haven't had that conversation, a lot of women feel very overpowered by this. But I think you've also got to think about how it feels like for that person who's taking the Viagra, that I think women sometimes arc up and they get very angry about this of, hang on a second, we didn't discuss this. I don't want to have sex for all hours through the night. But think about the person that might be feeling insecure because he feels he has to take Viagra in order to perform. We all value ourselves on this idea of sexual performance. So I think it's always worthwhile having a conversation around the taking of Viagra. For some women, it might not even be necessary and it might be a case of, you know what, let's just get to know each other, let's fool around a bit, let's explore each other's bodies and see what happens and then discuss whether you feel that we should look at Viagra.
So in your opinion, if a man is intending to take Viagra or feels that he needs it, it's a conversation he absolutely has to have with the woman?
Yes, because it affects the both of you.
Right. I know we have a lot of male listeners and I imagine that conversation could be maybe a bit awkward for some guys. What are your tips for a guy to approach that conversation if he's been on a few dates with someone and thinks this could happen? And how do you bring it up?
I always think if you feel awkward about anything to do with sex, actually flag that you feel awkward. There's no point in trying to cover it up. And this is just a blanket rule, whether you're talking about Viagra, whether you haven't had sex for a long time and this is the first time you're going to have sex again, or, you know, maybe you have a complication. If you feel awkward about it, say to that person, you know what, I've got to talk to you about this and I just need to let you know I feel really awkward. It then excuses any of the behaviours that you might have been doing that have come out in another way. We all get anxious, we all have fear, and we all have different coping mechanisms that if someone is not aware of where that fear and anxiety is coming from, they can perceive that in another way. So I think it's always best just to be open and honest and say, I feel awkward. It then gives you that freedom to talk about it in a really matter-of-fact way.
And it opens up a bit of vulnerability as well, which is actually really, it's intimate and attractive. What about tips for women if their partner has taken Viagra?
Well, I think the first thing is talking about it, but in that circumstance, it might be too late to have the conversation before he's actually taken that particular pill, whatever it is. So I think you at least need to flag that you're uncomfortable if you are. For some women, they might not be uncomfortable or they might not even know or they might suspect, but it's a matter of, well, let's just not talk about it. Let's get on and have our sex. But if you feel not right in some capacity, because I don't think women normally do pipe up and say, I feel violated for you taking Viagra, because it's something we always speak about with men. It belongs to men. We're not seeing this link between a partner. So if you do feel uncomfortable and know that you do have a right to say something, but it's how you say it, because we need to consider that there may be an insecurity on the other side. Someone's sexual ego, their sexual performance is linked into that. So it's not a matter of getting aggressive and saying, hang on a second, you've crossed a boundary, I feel violated. It's more about, can we please talk about this? Because it just made me feel a bit uncomfortable and I'm not sure how I feel about that. If you don't have the words, say that, but at least express how you're feeling that, you know what, I just didn't feel so comfortable when you took that because it took me by surprise and I felt very overwhelmed by that.
What about if you've had the conversation, you've agreed to it? What are your expectations as a woman of what's coming at you?
Well, it's going to depend on the guy and the type of pill. I mean, this is the thing, is everybody reacts slightly differently. Okay. So, you know, don't ever think maybe you've just been with one person that's taken a type of aid. Maybe someone else is taking a different type of pill or has a different reaction to it or has a different way of reacting to it. So don't always go in there thinking it's always going to be the same as the last person because there's a common denominator. Be in there with an open mind to think, okay, let's experience this person and how they go through the process rather than trying to put everyone in the one category and say, all men that take Viagra Cialis are like this.
So we've really focused on some of the issues that affect men as they get older, but we've got to, you know, play fair, and we've got to talk about some of the issues that affect women.
Say, we've gone to the hard stuff, literally.
Yeah, yeah, we're straight into it. Oh, we got blowjobs and choking and all kinds of stuff to
great.
Come.
Let's go.
But let's just avert here. We've talked about Viagra for men. What about menopause for women? Because it's not just emotional changes. You know, I'm hearing some stories about physical changes, and all my group of girlfriends and I are getting very close to hitting this stage.
And it is kind of scary.
It is so scary.
What we've been taught so far about sex and menopause is not great. And, you know, you hear stories of, well, you go after the doctor and you either get onto hormone replacement therapy or you put a lube and that's kind of it. And I think the bigger issue here is that as a society, we don't recognise women as sexual post a certain age. You know, even have a look at a mother. You know, it frustrates me so often where there'll be a mother who's looking sexy or she's done a photo shoot or something and it's this, oh, and she's a mum. And I was like, hang on a second, why can't mums be sexy?
I know, lots of sexy hot mums. Haven't you ever heard of MILFs? That term's been around forever.
But why should it be a MILF? Why can't a woman just be sexy? I feel like even MILF is like, oh, it's so much better because she's a mother. You know, it's that whole statement of, and, you know, mother of three is out there doing that, like we've got to be surprised by it. And this is where it all starts. Women should be sexy at all ages, full stop. There shouldn't be a but. And that's the same thing when we see with women postmenopausal.
So, oh, you look good for your age.
Exactly.
You look hot for your age. But I'm talking about the physical issues of menopause and sex and how it affects you sexually.
So the physical issues, let's call a spade, but we're looking at the fact that the vaginal canal starts to dry out and it can also narrow. There's also, with hormones going on, could be a lack of desire. It doesn't mean that the brain isn't desiring sex. And this is where I think people get mixed up. There may be hormonal changes, but our mind is the most powerful sexual organ. So therefore, women still want sex. They want to feel needed, touch, sexual. They're still capable of having an orgasm. It's just that logistically, sometimes things can get more complex. So the sex toy industry has recognised that we have this population of ageing women who are struggling with sex but still want it. So there are so many different lubricants that now they've got this clinical research to actually show that using particular types of lube over an extended period of time can start to regenerate the cells in the vaginal canal. Just the other day, I got contacted by a gynecologist who said to me, I have this laser that I've been using on women either post-childbirth or post-menopausal that's actually been rejuvenating the vaginal canal.
Wow.
So there's all these options out there. I think the problem is that we're just not making them as available. Even GPs, I think, some GPs are still uncomfortable having this conversation. So, you know, the options are there. It's about reaching out to them. There's even companies that now have dilators. So it's like a kit with different sized, dildos that you can start to stretch or open up the vaginal canal if you feel that there has been a narrowing.
See, I thought it was the opposite.
Well, that can be an impact of childbirth. It's not always necessarily the case because what happens when things dry up? You know, think of that visual. If something's dry, it kind of shrivels a bit. So if we're taking
thanks
the
for that
moisture.
Visual, Nikki.
Sorry. Oh, but as we start to take the moisture out of it, there can be, it's right. Not necessarily in every case, but there can be a narrowing. So this is why also too, it's important to start looking at our definition of good sex. Now, a woman might find penetration sex a bit uncomfortable. Doesn't mean that she doesn't have a clitoris that isn't still working. You know, why does good sex just have to be about penetration?
You got to have the whole repertoire.
Well, you know, you've got to think about touch and kissing and even orgasms. You don't have to enter a vaginal canal to have an orgasm. What are your goals for sex? So it's not only about looking at what we can do with problems that are going on or obstacles that we're facing, but also looking at the way that our mind sees sex. And that's a wider problem in society in general, is why we still believe that penetration is the holy grail. We need to actually start opening that definition of what sex is in general and say, hang on, there are other ways to experience sexual pleasure. I know a lot of women that would be very happy to say, I don't know if I'm going to have penetration all the time, but, you know, I'd like that orgasm still.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So this lube you talk about, is this something you've got to get through a doctor or you can just get it at a sex shop or at a chemist?
Most sex shops. So I've started stocking some, but anything that is a Medi range. So there's a company called Pure. They do a Medi range. So I know that they do have research in conjunction with Monash University looking at this regeneration of the cells in the vaginal canal. A lot of lines of lube these days are catering for something that is on either the Medi or they'll call it a female word. So it's useful to have a look. If you can't find the Medi range from Pure, have a look around at some of the lubricant brands and the different variations underneath it, because they will make it very clear what it's for. You can even get vegan lubricant now, sensitive skin lubricant.
What about vaginal tightening? Because I know a lot of women do sort of think about this, particularly after childbirth. Does it really work? Does it make a difference? Is it worth the money?
I mean, I think it's a really personal question because, again, it goes back to how are you valuing your sex life and what you're getting at? What are your personal preferences? For some women, it's not as important. For other women, I think the advice is that there are options out there, and this is where we don't empower women enough to say, hey, it's okay to talk about this with a doctor and start reaching out. Like my friend that contacted me, the gynecologist that has lasers that he can do. Very non-invasive. It's literally a laser that gets inserted. I don't know exactly how it works because I haven't met with him yet, but it's not cutting. It's not anything like that. There are surgeons that can do things that are more invasive. I think the biggest thing with this is making sure you're aware of the options out there, but also that there are options. Same things with prolapses. You know, we used to think that a vaginal prolapse was something that you got post-childbirth and you were, you know, well into your 50s and 60s before that happened. A lot of younger women are facing prolapses and are not even aware that that's what they have because there's this barrier to reach out and talk about sex with the right medical professional. There are options and there are solutions, some more complex than the other, but there are things out there. So if we're not asking the right questions, then we're not accessing that information. But it also comes down to how you value your sex life. Now, if you're being pressured by a partner to do this, that's when you have to stop and really think about it and think about how you value yourself in that relationship. If it comes down to you not feeling comfortable and you feeling like this is impacting your sexual functioning, that's when you have to start going, okay, let's start those conversations going. Once again, using that whole line of if you feel awkward, even with a medical professional, say, I feel really awkward about this, but I feel like my entire vagina has changed post-childbirth. What are the options available? And let's discuss the risks and how it works.
You have such a lovely way of talking about this stuff and you're so knowledgeable. And just sitting here listening to you, I know that you're already empowering a lot of women. So thank you for doing what you do. While we're down there, can we just go Brazilian? So I want to get to choking in a second. But
I love the hair debate.
Do you know what? You know what? I hear it a lot. And every time I hear it, I feel insulted when I hear a man say, oh, I'll only date a woman who's clean shaven. I'd only be with a woman who's got a Brazilian. And a woman should never be made to feel embarrassed about her natural body. What is the psychology behind men, and a good number of men as far as I can tell, being obsessed with a woman having no pubic hair?
Well, I think there is a range of reasons for this, but I think the first one to address is this myth that men want women to look like 12-year-old girls. Now, I can't say that that isn't the way for some men. Let's call a spade, there are guys out there and that's what their intention, their motivation is. But then you have to look at the more functioning of that area. So I've had guys say to me, well, I like a clean working space. Now I did I'm going to challenge you for a minute. Let's just have a look if we swapped it with genders. So say if we had a penis and men had a vulva and a vagina covered in hair, and the way that we had sex with them was to orally stimulate that area. What would women be saying to men?
But it's the same as a man having hair down there.
But it's a little bit different because they have a phallus that hangs off. Yes, sometimes you can get a guy that has way too much bush and you're saying, you know what, go down and do some manscaping. And I know a lot of women that say this to men and say this to their partners. I'm not going down there unless you manscape that thing, or I'm not going down there because it smells. You need to remove the hair and start doing
things. Well, smelling is a different thing. I mean,
but it's still to do with
hygiene. Questionable hygiene is a whole other area. I think you can, you know, still have very good hygiene if you got some hair down there.
But if there is a lot of hair for some guys, that's a problem. So we still see the pressure on men to remove their pubic hair, but if they were the ones with a vulva and we were doing to them what sometimes they do to us, I assure you we would have women asking for them to remove their hair because they don't like the feeling of hair in their mouth. And sometimes that's what it comes down to for guys. Now, I don't agree with guys that put pressure on women and say, I'll only date a woman that has hair, because it's your right at the end of the day and it's how you feel about your body. And that's what it has to come down to. I don't think there's anything wrong, though, with having the conversation if you are dating someone, or I think it's more appropriate when you're in a relationship if one person says, you know what, darling, I love going down on you and I really love oral sex, but I just find it's a bit weird with hair in my mouth.
But men have been doing this argument for plenty of years before Brazilians came into it.
But
come on, what's happened to this generation of men that a little bit of hair scares them?
But we weren't talking about it as much as there's an option. You think about how common a Brazilian wax is and how many different products there are to remove your hair. We didn't have that. I'm scared of laser hair removal. That makes me fearful, because I think, what happens if the trend of hair comes back in? Because you have a look at the porn model, right? So let's go back to another theory and say, okay, men like women to remove their pubic hairs because that's what they see in porn and that's what they have been conditioned to think is attractive. Again, there is a fraction of that population where that's the truth. And we have a look at this younger generation that grow up really watching porn, and that's what they see. However, now we also have a trend in porn where pubes are coming back. And I've been on many porn sets, and you know what? I always saw pubic hair. Wasn't the big bush, but there were strips. So, you know, they're embracing this idea that a woman can still have pubic hair and be attractive. The reason why it came off when they were filming porn in the first place is because they had, was the visual. To get the camera in and actually see what was going on, because it was in those days a very male-driven society, it was about literally watching a penis go into a vagina. If there's a lot of hair going on, you can't really see that as well.
So what's your tip for women who don't feel comfortable having a Brazilian, or have come out of a long marriage and they just never thought to have a Brazilian, and they're about to start having sex again and wondering, well, is he going to expect
that? Don't be dating guys
one?
That are going to be dominating you to have a Brazilian. I mean, this is a very quick way to find out what a person is really about. Yeah. If some guy is saying to you that you have to have a Brazilian, well, what does that say about his personality?
Exactly.
At the end of the day, it's your body and you need to do what you feel comfortable with it. I personally like it, but that's me. Even if I wasn't with my partner, that's how I would be. If somebody told me that I had to change my vulva region for them, I would question what type of person I'd be getting involved in. So never let somebody shame you. Be naturally who you want to be. If someone wants to talk to you about a practicality thing, discuss it in a really open, you know, an open-minded forum. But if someone is pushing something on you that you don't want, same thing if someone was pushing sex on you and you didn't want it, you have nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to feel embarrassed about. It's more about standing up for yourself.
Yeah. Can we talk about choking? Is there any sexual pleasure in it, or way to do it safely? And when did it become a thing?
So there is a sexual pleasure in choking, and we kind of have to take this away from being seen as an offensive, dominating act. So let's just look at it from a sexual point of view. So for some people who enjoy the submission and the dominance play in the bedroom, now this doesn't necessarily have to go into BDSM. Some people just enjoy taking those roles on. Choking is a way that they feel that they can achieve that. Now, I know people think, how can a woman ever enjoy being choked? But there are a lot of women out there who actually do. But it's something that needs to be spoken about. There needs to be that permission. And there also does need to be a conversation around how you stay safe. You know, there is a way to choke somebody. And you think about, if you were to put your hand around someone's neck and you're pressing down on their chest with the palm of your hand, that's very uncomfortable. There is a way of slightly restricting the airflow without it feeling too much weight, but also as the person is being choked, they're able to pull the hand off. So if it does get too much, instead of just trying to choke out those words, stop, stop, or you've got a safe word, there's a way to pull that person's hand off as though to say, okay, I've had enough. There's also this idea that restricting blood flow can actually help to increase an orgasm. Now, there are a lot of studies out there to prove that it can be done. It can get dangerous, though, depending on what you're utilizing. That's why I would never suggest somebody, unless they have trained in that area, unless they've gone and done a class or they've spoken to someone about how to do it, never to restrict someone's neck with an apparatus that they're not skilled in, because this is where it gets dangerous. But you then have this issue when we have a look at, let's go back to the porn issue. You do have this generation of people who are looking at porn to role model sex from. And this is the problem with how we see porn, because that's not correct. Porn should be sexy entertainment, but let's face it, most people growing up are curious about porn. They want to jump online, see what it's all done, and they think, oh, chicks like this. This is what I should be doing. And this is not even just in a younger generation. This is just across the age span in general, because people are watching more porn these days thanks to the internet. And this is that myth that you might get a guy that you've just hooked up with who goes straight in for the choke, but his mind is thinking, oh, yep, I saw that and that looked cool and this is what this girl wants.
I've had it happen on more than one occasion. The first time.
Do you know how much porn they were watching?
Someone. No idea. It was the first time I had sex with them. It was very early on in the relationship, actually. I don't think any of them continued. But it shocked me that they would think that it was appropriate to go for the choke. Mm. But the psychology, again, of why a guy thinks it's okay to just go for that without any prior discussion.
We've never had conversations really in society about how we discuss boundaries. And I think this is a perfect example of that. Because we think that boundaries these days and consent is really uncool. It's like, hey, do you want to have sex with me? Okay, how do you want to have sex? Okay, so I like oral sex. You know, that's how they think it should go. Now, let's go back to one of these guys that's, you're first having sex with him and then he's going for the choke. If he was to sensually whisper in your ear, hey, Sammy, would you like me to choke you? And you could whisper back and go, no, thank you.
No fucking way.
You know, there's a way to discuss these things without having to be so matter of fact of, hey, Sammy, do you mind if I choke
well,
you?
No, I don't think anyone's expecting that.
But no, yeah, but you why need is to it, ask permission.
Happened in the world that it is now, and I know it's not just me, I know it's happened to other people, and I know men in their 50s that are having sex with a woman for the first time and she's asking them to be choked, for them to choke her. When did this all start happening?
Because we have a lack of sex education and we're educating ourselves with porn. Now, right, there are women out there who enjoy this act, and that's fine if that's how they enjoy it, whether it's to take the role of being submissive or whether they enjoy the sensation of it during sex, that's fine. There are men out there that enjoy this act as well, and this is where the whole issue of dominance gets a bit scary. There's nothing wrong if a man enjoys being the dominating one in the bedroom, as long as it stops in the bedroom and there's a differentiation between in the bedroom and dating and relationship and this idea of dominance. However, the thing that we're not discussing in the society is how we have those conversations around boundaries and consent during sex. I actually think for, and we could look at this for other sexual acts, it's not just choking that men think it's okay just to go in and do. Let's talk about anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hang on, if somebody tries to poke you in that region during sex, it is not a comfortable sensation, buddy. But they think from what they have seen that, first of all, it's that simple because they don't see what porn stars have to go through to actually prepare for that. But second of all, we haven't had conversations with dating these days around how we discuss all this stuff in a way that's not clinical, in a way that still sounds sexy, so that somebody knows what your boundaries are and what you're able to do and what you would like to do and where you'd like to stop. That to me is the biggest problem, is that wouldn't it be great if you're on a date and you know it was going to sex and you knew what each other wanted and didn't want? Then you know what the type of sex that you could have would probably be really amazing, because you're not going to get your defenses up because your boundaries are not being crossed. You're focusing on the acts that feel good. Isn't it sad that we haven't really been educated about how to do that? So really the psychology of a man thinking that he can get away with it is because he hasn't been taught any different.
One last question that I think is, you know, it's not a sexy question to talk about, it's not a sexy issue to talk about, but we need to, is contraception and STDs and STIs, because dating at my age, it shocks me how many men just don't even think to have a condom on them. And stats are showing that rates of sexually transmitted diseases continue to rise in people aged 45 and over. Gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, hep B, HIV. Listen, people, year after year, the stats are rising and it scares the pants off me. Actually, it keeps my pants on.
I was about to say, yeah, that would work the opposite. Yeah, it also rises in old age homes.
I know. Yeah. Can you have good sex with a condom?
Yes.
How? This is the reason a lot of men say, oh, it's just, I don't like it. It doesn't feel right.
First of all, condoms are made in all different shapes and sizes, and there are so many variations on the market, right? For the men out there, find the one that you like.
But a lot of people, Nikki, would say, I've never found a condom I like.
Keep looking. And this is the thing, is that as a woman, if someone is not prepared to use a condom during sex, then why should you be prepared to put your body at risk? It's that simple. And I know that we have this debate over and over again. Guys say, oh, I feel like I'm being choked, or I don't feel like I can get an erection with a condom on. It's like the lube and menopause debate. There are so many different options out there. And when I say so many different options, there's one company that are now making custom condoms where you can send measurements in and they have like a few hundred variations of the type of condom that you can get. So say you are the guy that says, I've never found one. Okay, it's not a good enough excuse anymore. If you want to have good sex and you want to have safer sex, it's not a foolproof method, but if you want to have safer sex and it's still to feel comfortable, then go and keep searching until you find the one that fits you. And you know what? When you find that one, keep it on you, because it shouldn't be necessarily the woman's responsibility. I mean, women can carry condoms, and I think we should.
I always do, because I've come to the point where I can't expect the guy to have it. Like, they just don't carry
them. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to carry the one that works for him. And that's the message to guys, is that
well,
women should always
carry extra large, and if it doesn't fit, well, too bad.
Do you know there's actually, there's an American brand that make, I think it's a Magnum. And it's it's not actually a Magnum. It's quite a clever marketing strategy, because men always think that they're bigger than they are, and they like this idea of size matters. So the condom size itself is not what you would think is a Magnum. It's like the one down. It's just that guys, they found that men were going for the Magnum. Right. So find the condom that works for you. I also think for women, learn how to put a condom on. I don't get these girls that are like, okay, you do it. You know, it's still a sexual act. It can be sexy. Even if it is a matter of sitting at home and playing with fruit and condoms, get used to how you can put it on quickly, because it can be a bit of a barrier. Say you're someone that's like, oh, I just fumble with it, and then I stop, and then the mood goes and we start to feel weird. Then it's really a matter of, okay, if you can get it on really quickly, it's an act that is so brief, you can get back to what you were focusing on. So that's not just up to the man's responsibility to learn how to put a condom on. Also for women, learn how to put a condom on the right way. So even things like putting a drop of lube in the tip, nothing that's oil-based. So don't go use olive oil and things like that as lubricant with condoms, because it breaks it down. But a water-based or a silicone lubricant in the tip of the condom.
You mean like a KY or something like that?
Yeah. Or, I mean, I prefer some better quality, nothing with KY, but I like, you know, the less crap that you can get into lubricants as possible when you look at what goes on in our vulva regions and what can happen. But if you put a drop in the tip, what happens is it starts to decrease that friction. Okay, because the friction is what increases the chances of breaking the condom. So the condom will slide a bit in a good way, and it will feel more pleasurable for him, but it will also decrease the chances of breaking, even using a lubricant in general. You know, lube is the thing that we don't talk about enough. If we used more lubricant on the outside, again, you think, okay, sometimes silicone doesn't feel that nice. Why doesn't it feel nice? Because it's not sliding. Okay, so let's use lubricant. There's always a solution to this. It's a matter of understanding how to use a condom effectively. And I think that's the problem for a lot of people. If they don't know how to put them on, if they don't know how to use them, if they don't know the right one, of course it's going to feel uncomfortable.
But I mean, at the end of the day, there are more single people, you know, in midlife dating than ever before, starting to have sex again with new people, you know, with all the erectile dysfunction medications, men are having more sex as they get older. I think a lot of people are embarrassed to talk to their doctors about STDs. I think people who've been in long-term marriages or relationships haven't used protection for probably 10 or 15 years with their husband or their wife. It's just it's a new mindset to get your head around. But I do want to say, I read something the other day that really shocked me. In America, adults over the age of 50 represent half of the population of people living with HIV, people over the age of 50.
And this is, we don't talk about HIV in the heterosexual community enough. And that's another thing I get really passionate about is that, you know, we've all heard of PrEP and PEP. Well, a lot of us have heard of PrEP and PEP, post-exposure prophylactic. So if you think that you've had sex with somebody and come in contact with HIV, if you're able to take PEP afterwards, PrEP is before, you know, you can actually greatly decrease the chances of the fact of you actually contracting HIV. Mm. Now, this is something that is readily available in what they call the high-risk community. So men who have sex with men, gay, straight, or anything in between, lower socioeconomic and drug users. It is not spoken about for heterosexual women, and this always really frustrates me because why shouldn't we be as educated to understand that it's available? Now, I'm not quite sure what it is at this point in time, but when I first started researching it, I did the normal research, right? I started calling people, trying as a heterosexual woman, to find out where I could go to get tested, where I could also receive PrEP. PEP. Sorry, I get so confused. Yeah. PrEP before, PrEP after. Now, some of these clinics that were sexual health clinics were saying to me as a heterosexual woman, no, we're here to cater those, the high-risk community. You need to go to your family GP. So when I started asking some family GPs, including my own, they said to me, no, we have to have a separate qualification, like the methadone scheme. Every doctor can just prescribe methadone. At that point in time, and this was about 4 years ago when I was writing my book, at that point in time, GPs also had to have an additional qualification to be able to prescribe PEP. Now, a lot of GPs were not even that knowledgeable about it.
Do you think now
it's... Now I'm not sure how it's changed because I know in my chemist I see signs about PrEP and PEP. But what frustrates me is that there's this lack of knowledge out there because you might not know when you have sex with somebody if you've come in contact with HIV. It's not that simple. So if you've had unprotected sex, you've been out, you think, okay, it happens. First of all, don't beat yourself up and start feeling so guilty about it. It happens. Try to learn from it and try to learn why you got yourself in that situation. It's more about what we do with it. Now, you should have a right to be able to go to your doctor and say, I'd like an STI check, but I also don't know this person's sexual history. Can you talk to me about what will happen if I take PEP? Because it isn't an easy drug either. So it's just a matter of why do we not have that education to empower women to give them the option to at least reach out and find more.
Nikki, this is just so fascinating. I just love talking to you about all this stuff. I was planning to get to listener questions, but we've run out of time. So I'm going to do a whole second podcast with questions from my listeners. Can you stick around and...
Of course.
We'll do a whole new recording for that.
Of course. We've spoken about pubic hair and who knows what else we're going to discuss.
Romantically Challenged was presented by me, Sammy Lucas, in collaboration with Podcast One Australia. Sound production was by Matt Nikolic and the executive producer is Jenny Goggin. For more episodes, go to podcastone.com.au, download the Podcast One app or look me up on iTunes.